Thanks, Greg. Well, hello. My name is Doug Soldot. I'm an extension turfgrass specialist at the University of Wisconsin-Madison. I'd like to acknowledge my my graduate student and also co-author on this presentation, Sabrina Roos. And I'm really happy to be here in Long Beach because I was supposed to get in last night. My flight was canceled. I walked in about an hour ago to load up the presentation, so I'm running on a can of Coke and some Delta cookies right now. So if I fall over, you'll know why. So I just wanted to. Kevin Frank and I were talking a little bit before about how he says, "Well, I'm going to talk about your data. I hope I don't make you mad." And I said, "Well, I'm talking about yours, so right back at you." So I'm going to present a lot of the research I use in my classes and in extension presentations to talk about nitrogen leaching, and I'm going to try to propose an old concept. I think we've known quite a bit for a long time, but I think the way that we talk, at least as turfgrass scientists, the way we talk about nitrogen leaching, I think we could do in maybe a little more enlightening way. So the old way, or the standard model for talking about nitrogen leaching is, of course, if we have large doses of soluble nitrogen, sandy soils, a lot of rainfall, or too much irrigation, and then these applications made at a time when the plant uptake potential is low, these are all the risk factors for increasing soluble nitrogen loss. Right, so this is the recipe for disaster, and of course these things have been ironed out over the past several decades by some of our members. The widely cited Petrovic paper summarizes, I think this is from the abstract, limiting irrigation to only replace moisture used by the plant, using slow release nitrogen sources, and using less sandy soils will significantly reduce or eliminate nitrate leaching from turfgrass sites. Okay, so that's just a summary of the previous points that I pulled out, and then moving on to a more recent literature review in the new turfgrass monograph. Kevin Frank and Beth Gertal summarize the leaching data like this. They say, from this body of work have come several general recommendations to limit nitrate leaching in turfed soils. Avoid over-application of nitrogen fertilizers. Consider the use of slow-release sources or split applications of soluble sources, and do not irrigate to excess. So again, the same things, same recommendations coming over this large body of work looking at nitrate leaching from turfgrass sites. They go on, they say putting greens often fit the worst-case scenario. So they're often constructed out of sandy soils. The percentage of nitrogen lost as leached nitrate varied by study, but was often less than 2% of applied nitrogen. So here we have these systems. They're usually constructed out of sand. Can be in high rainfall regions, or they're obviously irrigated. We're putting down soluble nitrogen sources, and we still often find less than 5 and 2% of applied nitrogen. Now, there do exist several studies that show different results, where you have these worst-case scenarios where you can get substantial soluble leaching losses. So this is from Mangiafico and Guillard in 2006, and this table is showing the timing effect of about a 50 kilogram per hectare nitrogen application over a course of 2 years, so mid-September through mid-December, and you can see that the percentage, so the table showing the applied fertilizer recovered in the leachate, ranged from anywhere from 16% in year one, which was an unusually dry period, to anywhere from 30% to 60% in year two, which was a standard weather year for Connecticut. Again, sandy soils, lots of rain, soluble, and then this application is made in the late fall when plant uptake potential is low. So we can find examples in the literature where nitrogen leaching losses from turf can be substantial. Moving on to a study that was published in 1996, and this is a quote that I think really embodies the way that I find myself talking about nitrogen leaching to the general public or to a lay audience that maybe assumes that nitrogen leaching losses are very concerning. So this quote is, total leachate Recovery of nitrogen was 0.23% over the two-year period. Whether the nitrogen was applied in the spring or late fall, rapid uptake and immobilization of the applied nitrogen resulted. And they concluded that a well-maintained turf intercepts and immobilizes nitrogen quickly, making leaching an unlikely avenue of nitrogen loss from a turf system. So really powerful summary there. And of course, this is a great picture of the dense fibrous network of turfgrass roots that I borrowed from Brian Horgan and Van Klein at Toro. And so I think this is that dense network of roots that's intercepting that nitrogen and immobilizing it. In fact, that is the immobilization. That's a very ephemeral root system which is turning over on an annual basis. You have all these fine roots that are adding carbon and nitrogen to the soil that is only slowly made plant available. Researchers have studied that found that the architecture of these root systems within the different grass species or among the different grass species matters. I'm looking at my colleague Nick Balser, who's looked at the root architecture in landscape plants affects nitrate leaching. So this is a complicated system, but in general, when you have a root system that looks like that, it's no surprise that immobilization is a dominant pathway. And of course, turfgrass scientists have been struggling with this rapid accumulation or immobilization of organic matter, carbon and nitrogen, for years. And in fact, that accumulation is a problem in these sand-based putting greens. So here we have a classic image from Rakuswa and colleagues showing this accumulation of organic matter as one of these sand-based putting greens evolves. So the recommendation is remove it, pull the cores out of the green, backfill it with clean sand, keep that organic matter content low. A different perspective of that, I think this is one of a really high-impact paper published by another speaker here, Yaling Chin, and Follett in 2002. This is the first study that looked at that carbon accumulation as the potential for, or just showed the massive amount of carbon sequestration potential in these grasslands. And so here you can see that they studied putting greens and fairways, and it was roughly a doubling of soil organic matter, starting in these data were from Colorado, starting around 1 to 2% and then ending up around 3 to 4% after about 30 years. And so we'll come back to this figure in a bit. Since that paper, there's been several studies that have done similar things and looked at the amount of soil carbon accumulation in these turfgrass systems, primarily due to that very vigorous below-ground root mass and the high maintenance. So to some great work out of Colorado State, this graph is a sensory model simulation showing how nitrogen management influences the rate of that carbon increase. So the standard university recommendation. And Greg, did you say there was a mouse around here?
The cursor.
Oh, there it is. Okay. So the standard university recommendation for a healthy lawn is at least where I'm from, is going to look something like this top line. So about 150 kilograms of nitrogen per hectare per year with the clippings removed. And you can see that results in this soil, in this climate, resulted in a kind of a leveling off of the carbon after only 30 to 50 years. Whereas if you do something like 75 kilograms of nitrogen per hectare and you remove your clippings, you can see that soil organic matter essentially stays flat. So the nitrogen input has a big role in how rapid that carbon accumulation is. And this is really different than what we see in agricultural studies. So this is a snapshot of a table from a paper published out of the University of Wisconsin, Greg Sanford et al., looking at long-term carbon changes due to cropping systems. And so the table here is showing the delta, the difference between the soil carbon from 1989 to 2009. Okay, so in a graphical form, this is what it looks like. So it's a percent change in organic carbon for all these different cropping systems. So cropping system 1 through 6 is just some different type of crop or tillage rotation. And you can see that they're all negative over that period of time. Similarly, another paper entitled Contemporary Evidence of Soil Carbon Loss in the U.S. Corn Belt shows the change in soil carbon in megagrams per hectare. And again, at the bottom here, they have different tillage and different nutrient or nitrogen inputs. There is one that's positive here, and it's no-till fertilizer. And that is, of course, what we're doing with our lawns. We're not tilling it, and we're fertilizing it. So in this case, they observed an agricultural analog of the lawn. So the fact that we're accumulating carbon and nitrogen in such rapid fashion makes these lawns and these grasslands really interesting and really different from most of the other ground covers out there. So we're going to do a few calculations here. So this I just pulled this top quote here out of an ASA abstract that looked at organic matter accumulation in putting greens in Nebraska. And they found as greens age, organic matter concentration increased at a yearly rate of about a third of a gram per kilogram. So if we do some assumptions on the bulk density of that layer and the depth of sampling, and assume that organic matter is 5% nitrogen, we can take that 0.3 grams per kilogram and turn that into kilograms of nitrogen per hectare per year. And that's essentially the immobilization portion of the nitrogen cycle. So 20 kilograms of nitrogen per hectare per year is immobilized. Doing the same thing for the Chin and Fala paper 2002, looking at those two graphs I'm showing here that we looked at earlier, 1.8% organic matter is the time zero point for the fairways, and they increased over 30 years to up just over 4%. So that's about 50 kilograms of nitrogen per hectare per year that's immobilized. So every year, that amount of nitrogen is being immobilized to feed that increase in soil carbon. And the putting greens were similar at 57 kilograms of nitrogen per hectare per year. But let's go back to that graph. I calculated that for the increasing portion of the range. So it only increased for 30 years, and then it basically leveled off. So that huge sink for nitrogen essentially dries up. It has an endpoint, and in this case, it happened after about 30 years. Now this was documented by Porter et al. In 1980, and then Petrovic put this in his lit review on nitrogen leaching or nitrogen cycling in turfgrass soils. And so you can see the same thing. These are data from New York, and this is total nitrogen in the soil, where we have this 20-30-year increase before we start to level off in the total amount of nitrogen in the soil. So very smartly, Marty Petrovic says, thus, on younger sites, younger turfgrass sites, the rate of nitrogen applied should match the rate at which it's stored in the soil, so recognizing that sink, used by the plant and lost to the atmosphere. Older turf sites should be fertilized at a rate equal to the removal by the plant and loss to the atmosphere. And he says, thus, old turf sites should be fertilized less to reduce the potential for nitrate leaching. So that at the beginning, I said, this is really not new. We've been talking about this in this way for a while, but if you look at the words here, older site, younger site, more, less, it's very vague and very conceptual. It doesn't really help out the homeowner that much. But again, these ideas have been around, and we've been noticing them for quite a long time. So we've been working, we've been dabbling in this area and coming and reading some of these conceptual model papers, and this is one that really hit home with me. It's called The New Conceptual Model of Nitrogen Saturation Based on an Experimental Nitrogen Addition to an Oak Forest. And so pulling the quote out of this paper here, they say, we distinguish capacity nitrogen saturation in which the sinks in the vegetation and soil are zero. So that would be our case when we're done accumulating carbon and nitrogen in the turf. From kinetic nitrogen saturation in which the sinks are positive but lower than the nitrogen input rate. So I think that's exactly what we have here. We have two very distinct mechanisms for leaching, and they're both very relevant to how we manage and we study turfgrass. So paradigm shift is probably a little bit too dramatic of a phrase for this, but I think it would be very helpful to start talking about nitrogen leaching from turf systems in terms of kinetic or basically catastrophic events where you have lots of soluble nitrogen, a sandy soil, lots of rainfall, versus these capacity nitrogen events, where maybe leaky is a better term, which they can happen in very small amounts over extended periods of time. And they may not be related to your timing of your nitrogen input. Now again, back to Yaoling Chen's work, we see that the sentry model basically predicts this. After we reach that plateau, if we don't change our inputs here from the standard recommendation of about 150 kilograms of nitrogen per hectare, we slowly start to increase more leaching every year. So we're leaching at the end here, after 100 years, almost 60 kilograms of nitrogen per hectare, while the other management zones are still in the immobilization phase and are not that soil has not hit that capacity yet. These are data from Michigan State, and I think this is basically the only field confirmation we have of that capacity saturation event. So these plots were started being fertilized in about 1990, and so this graph, I guess, ends in about 2009. I don't have the data before 1998, but you can see at some point here, and we're looking at two different fertilization regimens with a high nitrogen rates receiving maybe 4 to 5 applications. That's about 200 to 250 kilograms per hectare per year. And the low nitrogen rates receiving about 100 kilograms of nitrogen per hectare per year. And you can see a very distinct separation of the nitrogen leaching, and this is milligrams per liter in monolith lysimeters. And if you look at the specific timing of these peaks, you'll see that they coincide with the late fall, winter, early spring, when the plant uptake potential is low. And the valleys here, when the leaching drops off to, or the concentration of leachate drops off to about zero, is when the plant's growth potential is high. So I think this is a pretty clear example of that capacity saturation. The soil saturated with nitrogen. In the winter, you still have some mineralization going on, but the uptake of the grass is low or zero, and so that leaks down into the system. Most nitrogen leaching figures look nothing like this. But I think it's a very important pathway that we need to be aware of. So these data are some estimates of how homeowners actually fertilize. And Bruce Augustin, I think it was in 2006, presented data where he assumed that the average home lawn, so about 50% of homeowners don't fertilize, and we saw some confirmation of that data today. Maybe that's a little bit low. The average input is somewhere between, let's say, 60 and 80. I think your data were 40 and 80 kilograms per hectare per year. And so if we go back to the sentry model input here, that's this system, this black line. And, of course, this is for Colorado and a specific soil type. But so we're maxing out our carbon sequestration. Maybe 70 or 80 years is when we're starting to hit that peak. Well, when we started building lawns in suburban areas after World War II, that's about 70 years ago, okay? So I think we're at a really interesting point in kind of the history of lawns in the United States, where we may be nearing a sort of a saturation point for a lot of this turf area. So what happened? We've been saying nitrogen leaching is not important. Immobilization is a major pathway. What happens if that begins to be not true? And so I think we're at a really critical time here with, like I said, with the age of the average home lawn in this relatively long-winded period where immobilization is occurring. So sort of to summarize and go to discussion here, the directions that I see as being most fruitful for future research are, I think we need to shift our research focus. If we're going to study nitrogen leaching, we should shift away from those kinetic events or the catastrophic events and try looking for these potentially areas where capacity nitrogen saturation would be happening. So I think it would be good to get more data than field data than what we have, more observations. I think we need to continue to investigate the utility of new soil tests or extractions to estimate soil nitrogen saturation. So a major challenge is figuring out what is an old site, what is a new site, when is the soil saturated with nitrogen. Investigate the accuracy of of conceptual or of model of nitrogen cycling models like Descent or others that predict soil nitrogen saturation, and then began implementing fertilizer recommendations based on either some physical soil test and or a probably more likely a combination of a physical soil test and a modeling simulation that predicts the immobilization. And so the good news is a lot of this work is already going on in our division and in the society. So these are just three papers I pulled out from our C5 members. Development of best turfgrass management practices using the Descent model. Turfgrass growth and color correlated to the spring Illinois soil end test. And then spatial variability of the Illinois soil end test, implications for sampling in a turf system. So I think a lot of our members are doing this. I feel like maybe it's a good time to formally change the way that we talk about this. And my last slide here is a slide out of this paper here by Zhang and others in 2013, which is showing what that might look like. So here, graph A at the top here is the nitrogen fertilizer input on the Y in kilograms per hectare required for either a medium or high quality lawn, and A is dependent on clipping management. So these are when the clippings are fully returned, which I think is the normal situation for the American lawn. So what they're showing here is basically a computer model optimized recommendation to minimize nitrogen leaching but still maintain either the desired quality level. B here on the bottom is simply just a different clipping management system. So the clipping management and the fertilizer inputs being the two major components of the nitrogen cycle that the homeowner affects. So I think things like this are really exciting, and I hope that we continue to study and learn more about nitrogen cycling in the lawn so we can get to an area where, as an extension professional, that we can be really confident that the nitrogen and the fertilizer recommendations we're giving to our homeowners are protective of environmental quality. So with that, I'd like to thank you for your time and open it up to questions.
We have time for probably one question, and please repeat it.
Sure.
So one of your final comments was that we should move away from thinking about catastrophic events towards these catastrophic events.
Yeah.
Why?
So the question is, one of my final comments was, should we move away from these studying the kinetic events and move towards the capacity events? And the question was why. I guess I don't mean to say that the kinetic is not an important method of nitrogen loss, but I think it's one that we have a fairly good grasp on. And I think by ignoring or not giving enough attention to the capacity events, we may be missing what I think will be a really important component of the nitrogen cycle in either now or in the near future as the soils become saturated. So do you have a? Yeah.
But the capacity thing, you point about what the common practices on the U.S. lawn. If you look at August and days, the most common practice on American lawns today is to field go first. The biggest group by far is people don't apply any first.
Right.
And they're quite happy with that, as Sharon's data suggests. And so you can solve the capacity problem pretty easy, but the catastrophic problem is not.
Right.
All right, great. Thank you.